William and the Prize Pig. William was aware, when his father promised to take him to the pantomime in London for a Christmas treat, that he would have to tread very carefully. He knew that his father would secretly welcome any excuse for abandoning the project. The other outlaws were equally anxious for William to go to the pantomime. Afterwards, William's father was going to take him to tea with an old aunt of his. Whenever William's father took him to see her, she gave him 5 shillings, and it was the outlaws' custom to pool their tips.
"If I was you," said Douglas, "I'd just do nothing between now and then, except eat at mealtimes and go to bed at night. Then he can't have any excuse for not taking you."
William nodded. "I'll just go for quiet walks," he said. Unfortunately, it was one of these quiet walks that proved William's undoing. The outlaws had been leaning peacefully enough over the sty that housed Eglantine, a prize pig of gigantic proportions belonging to Mr. Ballater. But then William's sense of adventure had got the better of him. He couldn't resist climbing over and attempting to ride on the vast creature's back. Eglantine, lured by tasty morsels the other outlaws were dangling in front of her, had then burst through the open gate, and, stimulated by this new sense of freedom, she'd first trotted, then run across the lawn in pursuit of the enticing delicacies. Mr. Ballater, hearing the commotion, raced from the house, seized his cherished Eglantine by her inadequate tail, William fell off, and the whole thing ended in a melee in the centre of the lawn.
"I know you, my boy!" screamed Mr. Ballater, "and I know where you live. I shall call to see your father this very evening!"
The outlaws reassembled in the old barn.
"He'll tell your father, and you won't be able to go to the pantomime," said Douglas.
"And we were going to buy a toboggan with that money," said Henry.
"We've just got to stop him going to my father," said William.
"How?" said Ginger. William frowned in concentration. Suddenly his face shone.
"I know," he said. "We'll find out something he's done wrong in his past and hold it over him so that if he goes and tells about the pig, we'll set the police on him."
"Well, suppose he hasn't done anything wrong in his past," said Douglas.
"If he hasn't done anything wrong," said William, "why is he living in the country keeping pigs?"
This question seemed unanswerable. Such was the magnetism of William's personality that his band was now firmly convinced that Mr. Ballater was a world-famous criminal in hiding.
"How are we going to find out?" said Ginger eagerly.
"Just watch him and listen to him," said William. "Probably he's got some confederate coming to see him sometimes. They generally do.
Come to that, I don't suppose he's stopped.
I bet it's stealing that he did.
Where'd he get his money if he's not a thief? He doesn't go up to London to an office, same as our fathers do. I bet he's stealing now from all the people about here. I bet that pig's just to put people off.
But that doesn't give us much time to find out before your father comes home tonight," said Ginger.
It turned out, however, that William's father was staying with friends in town, so that gave the outlaws 1 extra day. That afternoon, they went back to Mr. Ballater's house. William hid outside the open drawing-room window to overhear any conversation that might be going on. It happened that Mr. Ballater had had a cousin to lunch. They were in the drawing-room, and Mr. Ballater was talking about Eglantine. He'd already told the cousin about the dastardly boy who'd let her out of her sty and ridden her across the lawn.
"Must have lost pounds," he moaned, "and the show is next week."
The cousin uttered a sympathetic murmur and covered a yawn.
"Of course," Mr. Ballater went on, "I have a good deal of jealousy to contend with. Fortunately, I've got snapshots of most of the pigs round here. Even the vicar, well, he's not kept them for a few years now, but even the vicar started the other day saying that his prize pig was as big as Eglantine. I showed him the photograph. He didn't like it at all."
He took out an album and pointed at the first page.
"That's the vicar's," he said. "I took it about 2 years ago.
William had just crept to the drawing-room window and was crouching beneath it to listen. This was the first and only sentence he heard.
"That's the vicar's. I took it about 2 years ago.
No sooner had he heard it than Mr. Ballater accidentally knocked over a small table and William fled. But he had heard enough. "He is one," said William when they reached the road. "He was showing someone something he stole from the vicar. He was just saying, 'This was the vicar's. I took it 2 years ago.' Telling them straight out like that." "What was he showing them?" said Ginger excitedly.
"I couldn't see," said William, "but I could just see there was a lot of silver stuff in the room."
"How are we going to let him know we know about his career of crime?" said Henry.
"I vote we write to him," said Douglas nervously.
So they wrote a note and put it through his letterbox. It was short and terse. It read, "All is known. Flee." It didn't have much effect because it fluttered beneath the hall mat and wasn't found till a week later.
"Tell you what," said Ginger, "we'll find out what he stole from the vicar and take it back. Well, even if he's wrote to your father, if we take back something that was stole from the vicar, that'll make it all right, won't it?"
"Well, yes, but how are we going to find out what he stole?" said Henry. "We'll just go along to the vicarage and see," said William.
The vicar's wife was just coming out of the front gate as they reached it. She was going away for the night to speak at a mother's meeting conference.
Please, said William, "did you have anything stole about 2 years ago?"
"Stolen, dear boy, stolen, past participle, stolen. I steal, he stole, the teapot has been stolen."
"A teapot, was it?" said William eagerly.
"Well, as a matter of fact, we did have a teapot stolen about 2 years ago. A beautiful silver teapot. Yes, it was a great grief to us. The only thing we've ever had stolen." "Stolen, note, dear boy, not stole, past participle, stolen. I steal, he stole, the teapot has been stolen." And she sailed on down the road towards the station.
"A teapot," said William. "That's what he must have been showing his confederate. Come on, let's go back and get it."
They entered Mr. Ballater's gate and looked about cautiously. The cousin had gone home, and Mr. Ballater was hanging over Eglantine's sty, gazing at her sadly and adoringly. The outlaws peered in at the drawing-room window, and the first thing they saw was a cabinet full of old silver pieces, among which was a silver teapot.
"There it is!"
William was over the windowsill and across the room. He was back with the silver teapot in a few seconds. At the gate of the vicarage, William took the teapot from under his coat.
"It's got to be the vicar's," he said. "He had it stole about 2 years ago, and I heard this man saying he stole it from the vicar about 2 years ago."
William knocked on the door. An untidy housemaid opened it. She looked at the outlaws as if she didn't see them. She and the milkman had plighted their troth the night before, and today she saw the image of the beloved everywhere. She gave William a fatuous smile.
"We want to speak to the vicar," said William.
"He's writing a sermon. He's not to be disturbed."
Well, said William, holding out the teapot, "we've got this back. It was stolen 2 years ago."
The housemaid was hardly listening.
"Teapot," William repeated. "Can you give it to him as a surprise?"
"Tea,"
she said dreamily, taking the teapot from his hands.
"Tea. All right."
William and his band hastily departed.
"She's balmy," said Ginger.
They went home to tea. Mr. Ballater was having tea with the vicar. Mr. Ballater was, as usual, waxing lyrical over the proportions of Eglantine. He was feeling much happier about her now. He felt she'd soon make up that pound or so she'd lost. Still, he told the vicar the whole story.
"I remember," put in the vicar, "in the case of that great pig I had 1 or 2 years ago..."
And just then, tea was brought in. The housemaid was still living in a glamorous dream. She placed the teapot on the tea table. The vicar poured out tea, and Mr. Ballater's eyes suddenly bulged. He stared.
His teapot! His Georgian teapot! He could have sworn it was!
The vicar was wielding it quite unconcernedly. To the vicar, a teapot was just a teapot. He poured the tea from Mr. Ballater's Georgian teapot before Mr. Ballater's gaping eyes.
5 minutes later, Mr. Ballater hurried breathlessly into his drawing-room, and there his worst fears were realized. His silver cabinet was shorn of its brightest jewel. His Georgian teapot had gone. He must act at once. Perhaps the vicar had a sort of Jekyll and Hyde personality, part vicar, part thief. He must get it back at any cost. Pale with horror, he set off again towards the vicarage. On the road he met four boys. One of them was the boy who'd treated Eglantine so outrageously that morning. That reminded him he mustn't forget to see his father tomorrow. "I reckon he's getting his loot together," said Henry, after he'd gone. "Before fleeing. Pity we didn't take a few more of those silver things he'd stole and stop him getting off abroad with them." "Let's get some of them now," said William. "I bet they must be the vicar's, too. I bet he'd be jolly grateful to me. He'd probably ask my father to take me to the pantomime anyway." The outlaws looked rather doubtful. "Well, I'll just have a try," said William. "The rest of you keep a lookout." William entered Mr. Ballater's house again, cautiously, by the drawing-room window. He went to the cabinet, and to his amazement, found it empty. He listened. Sounds came from upstairs. He crept upstairs. The sounds came from a bedroom. He peeped in. An unsavoury-looking individual stood at a dressing table opening drawers. There was a half-filled sack on the floor. Of course! It was Mr. Ballater's confederate, collecting the loot to take with them in their flight from justice. A bold plan came to William. He tiptoed into the room, slammed the door, locked it, and slipped the key into his pocket. It was the work of a second, but in that second the unsavoury-looking individual had turned round and hit out fiercely at William. William dodged the blow, dashed across the room to the open window, and slid down the water pipe. The unsavoury individual was too large to slide down pipes, so he contented himself with battering against the locked door and uttering horrible threats. The vicar and Mr. Ballater came down the road together. They carried the teapot tenderly between them. They were still discussing the mystery of its curious disappearance from Mr. Ballater's house and its still more curious appearance at the vicar's.
"From what the maid says," said Mr. Ballater, "it sounds like the same boy. I mean, the boy who made Eglantine run across the lawn this morning. I've rung up his father. He's away till tomorrow evening. I'm going to see him then."
They entered Mr. Ballater's garden and walked round the side of the house. A boy was sitting in the middle of the rose bed beneath a bedroom window.
"That's the boy," said Mr. Ballater.
The boy addressed the vicar calmly.
"Oh, good," he said. "You've got him. I hoped someone would catch him before he'd fled right off. I've got the other one up there. He's got all the rest of the things in a sack. You can hear him shouting if you listen."
William's father had arrived home.
"I suppose, my dear," he said wistfully to William's mother, "that nothing has happened to prevent my taking William to the pantomime tomorrow? I mean, no complaint from neighbours or anything like that?"
"Oh, no, dear," said Mrs. Brown. "Just the opposite. Mr. Ballater says he caught a thief for him. He's most grateful to him. There was something about a pig and a teapot, too. But it was such a complicated story that I couldn't follow it. Anyway, the upshot of it all is that William caught a thief, and Mr. Ballater is so grateful to him that he's going to take them all to the zoo next week for a little treat."
"Heaven help him," said William's father, feelingly.